जय राधा माधवा पुजारी हरि कोपी जाना वल्लभ गिरी वरदारी यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन चमुना किरवन चारी यमुना किरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कपि जन वल्लभ गिरि वरदारी यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन चमुना किरवन चारी जय राधा माधव तुंज बिहार कपि जन वल्लभ गिरि वरदारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी कपि जन वल्लभ गिरि वरदारी So as I mentioned, we're going to be speaking from a couple of different verses from the Bhagavad Gita in which Arjuna is being instructed by Krishna in a very, very important subject matter. That subject matter is happiness. Actually, if you look at all the Vedic literatures, it could be said to point to one objective. And Srila Prabhupada himself has made a statement that the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to teach people this one thing. And that one thing is happiness. So we're going to try to look at different ways in which Krishna, in his instruction to Arjuna, defines happiness and makes it possible for Arjuna and all of us, by his example, all of us, how we can become truly happy. Now, I'd like to ask you before we start, how many people are happy here? Not that many hands. He's a renounced person. He's happy. What about the rest of us? Well, maybe, just maybe, after the discourse this evening, we'll see more hands about who's happy, because why is it important to be happy in the first place? Does anybody have any idea what is happiness or why do we want to be happy? Anybody can say? Yes. It's our nature, our constitutional nature, to be totally blissful. Yes. Anything else? Yes.
Krishna's happy.
He's happy, so we're happy. Making Krishna happy makes us happy. Very good. Yes. Anything else? Yes, younger. The devotee's not happy, he's doing something wrong. So that means there's a process to become happy. Okay, very good. Very good. Okay, well, I'm going to start by reading a verse that might surprise you, because it's not an often quoted verse, and it deals with a subject. It deals with a subject that we don't think about much when we think about Bhagavad Gita and Krishna's instruction. No. Yarichchaya kopanganam svarga dwaram apavritam sukinam kshatriya parta labhante yudam itrusham. O Partha, happy are the kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought, opening for them the doors of the heavenly planets. So Krishna is bringing us right back to the battlefield and why Arjuna is here. Forget about the philosophy and everything. Let's establish where we're at right now. Krishna is trying to explain to Arjuna how to be happy. And this is his first attempt. So Srila Prabhupada says in a purport, as Supreme Teacher of the world, Lord Krishna condemns the attitude of Arjuna, who said, I do not find any good in this fighting. It will cause perpetual habitation in hell. Such statements by Arjuna were due to ignorance only. He wanted to become nonviolent in the discharge of his specific duty. For a kshatriya to be on the battlefield and to become nonviolent is the philosophy of fools. In the Parasara Smriti, or religious codes made by Parasara, the great sage and father of Vyasadeva, it is stated, the kshatriya's duty is to protect citizens from all kinds of difficulties. And for that reason, he has to apply violence in suitable cases for law and order. Therefore, he has to conquer the soldiers of inimical kings, and thus, with religious principles, he should rule the world. Considering all aspects, Arjuna had no reason to refrain from fighting. If he should conquer his enemies, he would enjoy the kingdom. If he should die in battle, he would be elevated to the heavenly planets, whose doors were wide open for him. Fighting would be for his benefit in either case. So fighting is happiness? What's going on here? Fighting is happiness? I mean, I don't know how many of you have experienced war or some kind of armed situation. There's not a lot of happiness in those situations. Thank you. Now I can hear myself. There's not a lot of happiness in those very tense, fearful situations that surround armed conflict. Yet Krishna, in this first attempt to make Arjuna happy, because that's what he's trying to do here. Arjuna, in the beginning, and seeing the battlefield, seeing the warriors ready to fight, he became disheartened. He couldn't understand why relatives would want to fight each other. Generally, relatives want to come together for what? For happiness. So, all he saw was not happiness, but distress. when he looked at the soldiers on the field. And so now, Krishna is trying to help him become happy, and he's telling him to fight. Am I the only one that's trying, having trouble putting these together? He's telling Arjuna to fight, and that will bring him happiness. Well, actually, what he's telling him is to do his duty. He's a Kshatriya. And in a system of social and spiritual orders called Varnashrama, there's a role that each person has to play. And if everybody plays their role properly, then there is what in society? There's peace and happiness. If you don't have peace, Krishna says a little later in the Gita, how can there be a question of happiness? So, if everybody in the Varnashram system plays their role, including that of a Kshatriya, who sometimes has to take arms and fight, then there will be happiness, a certain level of happiness in society. Hopefully we'll see over the course of this short talk how there are different conceptions of happiness at different levels of spiritual advancement. But at least for the beginning, to begin with, if you have to live, you have to do your duty. If you do that, you'll be happy. That's why Krishna's advising Arjuna to fight here. Although fighting can be quite a gruesome situation. And what type of happiness is being advised here? What type of happiness? Two things that are described as that. If he wins, he enjoys the kingdom. If he loses, he dies. Losing means dying now. Serious business. If he loses and he dies, then what enjoyment will he get? He goes to, not eternal. This is important. He goes to heaven, but it's temporary. He goes to the heavenly planets and enjoys what type of happiness? Sense pleasure, heavenly enjoyment. That's the kind of happiness that's being offered to Arjuna here in his desire to become happy. You can go to the heavenly planets and you can enjoy there. Live a long time, have a healthy body, have wonderful relationships. Heaven is a very attractive proposition. And Krishna is presenting that to Arjuna. But the same question is there. What is happiness? Shankar Gautama Mataji said, it's our eternal position. Did you say eternal or just our position? Constitutional, you said. Well, let's say eternal instead. Because if happiness is our eternal situation, and we follow this instruction of doing our duties in the Varnashram system, we get only temporary elevation to the heavenly planets. When our pious credits are finished, Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, what happens? Come down to this world where there is at best a mixture of happiness and distress. Heavenly planets, it's all happiness, all enjoyment, sense pleasure. But it ends, and we come to this world where mixed happiness and enjoyment is here. Mixed happiness is not going to satisfy anybody. I don't think anybody in this body is interested in more in that eternal happiness. And so let's see what else Krishna has to say about happiness in the Bhagavad Gita. So our next reference is from the 14th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And in the 14th chapter, in this section of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about the environment that we find ourselves in this material world. three modes of material nature, through three types of nature that we experience: ignorance, passion, and goodness. And each of those influences in the environment around us influence us in terms of happiness or distress. So let's read about what Krishna has to say about goodness, because again, goodness is conducive to happiness. Passion, passionate activity, we all have experience. We work real hard. I know in my work, sometimes I'm trying to beat the clock so I get the paper in before the day expires. And you know when I make the most mistakes? During that time when I'm rushing to beat the clock. Better I just took it easy. But that's the nature of passion. In ignorance, when I don't want to get up and just sleep through the job, I don't get much done. But mode of goodness is conducive to happiness, and that's what we want. So what does it say about happiness? In the 14th chapter is called The Three Modes of Material Nature, Goodness, Passion, and Ignorance. O sinless one, the mode of goodness, being purer than the others, is illuminating, and it frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge. So if you need some help becoming happy, Krishna is saying you can situate yourself where there is this predominance of the mode of goodness, because it promotes happiness. It promotes knowledge. Let me just read a little bit of Srila Prabhupada's purport, because it's quite enlightening. The living entities conditioned by material nature are of various types. One is happy, another is very active, and another is helpless. All these types of psychological manifestations are causes of the entity's conditioned status in nature. How they are differently conditioned is explained in this section of Bhagavad Gita. The mode of goodness is first considered. The effect of developing the mode of goodness in the material world is that one becomes wiser than those otherwise conditioned. A man in the mode of goodness is not so much affected by material miseries, and he has a sense of advancement in material knowledge. The representative type is the Brahmana, who is supposed to be situated in the mode of goodness. I love the way Prabhupada says that. Is supposed to be. We don't want to assume anything here. You have to check it out. Supposed to be. This sense of happiness is due to understanding that in the mode of goodness, one is more or less free from sinful reaction. Actually, in the Vedic literatures, it is said that the mode of goodness means greater knowledge and a greater sense of happiness. There's a sense that you're free from sinful activities and reactions. Sinful reaction, the result of our activities, are following each and every one of us, ready to do us harm. Actually, we do ourselves harm by creating sinful activities. And they are given to us, the reactions are given to us in the modes of passion and ignorance. Goodness, we have this feeling almost like we're free from sinful reaction. Can you imagine? Someone's pursuing you relentlessly and finally it stops. What is there going to be? There's going to be a sense of what? A sense of relief and happiness. Or relief first, but then happiness following. So by our environment, we can situate ourselves where we're in situations where we're more conducive to happiness than not. And so this is further knowledge that Krishna's offering Arjuna. First, he told him, as long as you engage in your duties, you're going to have to accept the reactions of those things. Here, Krishna's advising that you can actually situate yourself in a place where it may be easier for you to live without those reactions. Again, it's not eternal, it's not liberation. We talk about that, use that word, liberation. Oh, Mother Narayani, you're here. So the modes of nature can help us in an environmental way situate us where it's conducive to becoming happy, the mode of goodness. But that's not eternal. We have to give that up as well. And so finally, because I'm identifying four characteristics of happiness that are described in Bhagavad Gita, but there are undoubtedly more that others can enlighten us on. But I have four in particular. One we talked about, following your duty even as a warrior. Now the environmental effects of the modes of nature. And then when we get towards the end of Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita, we get to this description of the liberated state. Kamabhuta prasanatma nasochiti nakankshiti samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhite param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service to me. Now, in this verse and purport, there are two different conceptions of happiness. Both are spiritual. Both are on the liberated platform. Liberated platform means beyond the action-reaction sinful recycle that keeps us involved in the realm of karma. It means we're free from that. That person chasing us will never be there again. Those sinful reactions are all eradicated. And our constitutional position that Mother Agamaka told us about does become eternal. It does become eternal. So that's liberation, in which one is, as Prabhupada says in his translation, becomes fully joyful. It's not just happiness anymore. It's fully joyful. We should note that the emphasis and how things are stated. Pranav Vendekar was making this point yesterday in the class again. How things are stated make a difference, and they reflect the teachings of Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. So fully joyful, one becomes fully joyful when one reaches the liberated state. So in karma you had to work to turn your actions into reactions. In the modes of nature, you had to situate yourself properly so that you could be influenced properly by your environment. And here, in terms of liberation, you have to develop your consciousness to the point where it's beyond the material realm altogether. And there are two types of existence that are described in this verse and purport from Bhagavad Gita. The first is impersonal liberation. We no longer are affected by material miseries. but, well, let me just read what Srila Prabhupada has to say. For him, stone and gold are of equal value. This is Brahmabhuta's stage. And this stage is attained very easily by pure devotees. In that stage of existence, the idea of becoming one with the Supreme Brahman and annihilating one's individuality becomes hellish. The idea of attaining the heavenly kingdom becomes a phantasmagoria, and the senses are like serpents whose poisoned teeth are broken. So Prabhupada checks off these other kinds of happiness we've talked about. We don't want to become influenced by actions of the senses. They're like serpents with poisoned fangs. That's fruitive work, doing your duty. We don't want to be in the heavenly kingdom surrounded by the mode of goodness, because that becomes like a phantasmagoria, an illusion, not reality. And in this verse it's described that we don't want to be part of this world at all. We want to be liberated. And there's two ways: impersonal liberation and personal realization of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Now, I'm maybe sticking my neck out here a bit, but I want to hear from you all. Which one do we follow in this Brahmabhuta stage?
Personal,
yes. The personality of Godhead. And we try to do what? Satisfy his transcendental senses. And in that way we become happy. That's the supreme happiness. Engagement in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. Very actively, not in a passive denying the existence of the Lord kind of way, but in a very loving, having loving exchanges eternally with the Supreme Lord. That's what we want. That's what will truly make us happy. And the fact is that our acharyas have explained that the fruitive activities of doing your duty according to the Varnashram system, situating yourself properly in the material modes of nature, and even the impersonal understanding of the Absolute Truth and the liberation by that, these are all temporary. Even the impersonal realization is temporary. Who can say why? No activity. Yes, we're eternally sentient beings. And so we're denying ourselves. How can you be happy if you deny? If you're in denial, can you ever be happy? It's just keeping up a facade. So because we're eternal beings with senses, the only permanent liberated state for us is as the eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. And so that's what we strive for in Krishna consciousness. And that's what the teachings of Bhagavad Gita are. This verse I just read, Brahmabhuta Prasanatma, this is from the conclusion, the perfection of renunciation, from the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So happiness means what then? What does happiness mean? Now that we have a little background to that question. What do you want to change your statement, Mother Ramika? What is happiness and why do we want it? Anybody? Not just anybody. Yes. Bhakti means serving the Supreme Lord for his pleasure, and by the Lord's arrangement, we get the highest, the love supreme. Yes.
Yeah,
You want love. And love is not with an imperson. Love means with a person. That's what happiness means. That we have a loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the advanced study of the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, tells one very nice story about how to achieve happiness. It's a story that involves the appearance of one of the incarnations of the Lord, Sri Vamandev. Vamandev was a dwarf Brahmin, and he came to help settle a dispute that was going on between the Asuras and the Suras. There's always some kind of competition going on between godly people and ungodly people. And so Lord Vamandev got involved to try to get back the heavenly planets, the heavenly kingdoms, from Bali Maharaj, who was the leader of the Asuras, the demons. And there was a nice humorous exchange that went on between the Lord and Bali Maharaj, Vamandev and Bali Maharaj. And it gave some instruction about happiness and how to achieve it. We've got some idea, from thanks to all of your contributions, we've got some idea of what happiness is. But Vamandev, he gave instruction to Bali Maharaj how to achieve that definition. Bali Maharaj took the heavenly planets by force because he thought that that would make him happy and make his people happy. So he fought and then gained the heavenly planets and was ruling there. So to take these things back, the demigods prayed to the Lord, who appeared as Vamandev, a dwarf Brahmin. And Vamandev went to Bali Maharaj to ask him to give it back. He didn't go there to fight with him. He just went there to ask him. And he did it in a very charming way. He was a dwarf. And so he asked Bali Maharaj for 3 paces of land only, according to my steps. His steps were small. He was a dwarf. But he made that point specifically, according to my 3 steps. And Bali Maharaj found this humorous. He thought, oh, uneducated Brahmin boy, you don't know what I can do for you. I can give you everything. I can give you planets, I can give you villages, cows. Just ask me anything, and I can give it to you. I can make you happy. That was his point. I can make you happy. You've come to me with some need, and that's common to living entities that are in this conditioned world. We have needs. So you came to me with needs. You shouldn't have to go to anybody else to satisfy your needs. I can satisfy, I can make you happy. He was convinced of it. I can make you happy. So when Vamandev asked for 3 paces of land, he was amused. He was amused, but Vamandev was determined. And his determination was based on the key to being happy in this material world and going to the spiritual world as a result of that happiness. Both things can be accomplished. So the secret is to be satisfied. How to be satisfied? how to be self-controlled, and how to be satisfied. If you can do that, then you can be happy. But if you're not satisfied with what comes by providence, then you'll never be happy. You'll never be happy. There's a verse in the eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam that I want to share with you. This is Vamadeva speaking to Bali Maharaj. One should be satisfied with whatever he achieves by his previous destiny, for discontent can never bring happiness. A person who is not self-controlled will not be happy even with possessing the three worlds. Prabhupada's purport, if happiness is the ultimate goal of life, would you agree with that? That happiness is the ultimate goal of life? Does anybody do anything that doesn't ultimately can be brought to that level if you're doing it to be happy? Happiness is the goal of life. I don't think we'll get much debate on that, but if you want to debate, then we can. Even the Greeks thought like this. Aristotle had his his ethical theory. It's called Nicholas something. Maybe. What is it? Yes, Nicomachean Ethics. And in that he has a very philosophical presentation. But it all comes down to the same point, that the goal of life, the goal of good behavior, is to become happy. So Vamadeva is saying to Bali Maharaj, you're a fool, because you'll never be happy with living and preaching the kind of philosophy that you're saying. You'll not be happy. You can't be happy. Discontent can never bring happiness. And so, Prabhupada says here, this is where he says, I mentioned this earlier, this is where Prabhupada says, in this purport to this verse, according to Brahminical culture, one should be content with whatever he obtains without special endeavor, and should cultivate spiritual consciousness. And then he will be happy. Then he will be happy. These words should pierce our heart with happiness themselves. After traversing this material nature, life after life, for millions of births, and traveling from top of the universe to the bottom of the universe in search of this one thing and not finding it, and yet here in five words in a sentence, then he will be happy. Prabhupada's pleasing, he's promising us, you will be happy finally after all this traversing of the world. Then he will be happy. Then Prabhupada says a sentence I referred to earlier, the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to spread this understanding. We just want everybody to be happy, that's all. We don't want your money, we don't want so many things from you. We want to give you something. We want to give you happiness. That's the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. And that should be relevant to everybody, because as I said, what activity, what person's life is dedicated to any, ultimately we're speaking, is dedicated to anything else but happiness. So we should try to take advantage of this understanding of true happiness and to give it to others. In this way, we can ultimately go back home, back to Godhead, which is the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and all the literature produced by our acharyas. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So there are questions, comments, reflections on these subject matters.
I have a comment.
Okay.
What I understand from Prabhupada's purpose that since this life is the result of previous karma or activities, then whatever is coming, if I can gladly accept and be satisfied with it, itself give the foundation to go further in spiritual life.
Very good. Thank you.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for class. I showed up a little bit late, so I'm not sure if you already spoke about this, but you were talking about the sinful actions creating the sinful reactions, and then I think I heard you speak a little bit about the desires that lie dormant within the heart. And so I know once we stop committing the sinful actions, then the reactions stop, especially if we're in Krishna consciousness, then it's like Krishna karma. But I've heard the analogy of it's like turning off a fan, and the fan still has to like slowly come to its own stop before we can stop feeling like we're getting these sinful reactions. I didn't know if maybe you'd be able to elaborate on that and give us some, like me some like something to hold on to in those moments where I feel like the fan is still moving.
Well, they're different. Things advised to us in our practice of Krishna consciousness that help make the philosophy come to life and impact us more greatly. So one of those things is humility. Now humility helps us in understanding. It helps us in understanding how so you're not those reactions, become detached through humility. And in that way, we serve Krishna as he desires until all of our karma is finished, the fan stops moving, and we leave his body. That's one way to understand these ongoing reactions. Of course, when we're engaged in devotional service, the purpose of engaging in devotional service and strictly following the rules as are prescribed by our spiritual master and the previous acharyas is to make sure that we don't create any additional karma that we have, or that we don't commit sinful activities or Vaishnava aparad. It's such an important thing that once you're in knowledge, you have some knowledge. We have knowledge, we have a little time left. We're all going back to Godhead. So let's not mess up the activity. So we're going to be careful about what we do. Particularly even Vaishnava aparad, we should be careful. Because then more than past sinful actions get created. But we put permanent blocks almost in being able to go back to that. Does that help?
Thank you so much. That was beautiful. Beautiful.
Thank you, Prabhu, on this nice elaboration on the motive nature. You were reading something, and I'm afraid it escaped me. You were saying that the individual in the mode of goodness experiences happiness. The individual in the mode of ignorance, helplessness. And what was the passion? Do you recall you were reading in somewhere?
Chapter 14. Six? Does anybody remember what it was? Okay, it says active. One is happy, another is very active, and another is helpless.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah.
That's my issue.
I was thinking about you were just talking. Should use that in the service of the Lord. And I was also thinking that there's also that sometimes it's a matter of tolerating rather than actively and carrying on with our devotional service and bowing down to the Lord. Yeah. But that's humility, like you were saying, that takes humility for us to just realize, this is Krishna, and let me just tolerate.
Very, very important, right up there with Vamadeva's self-controlled. If you don't have that knowledge, then it's hard to tolerate. So, yeah, thank you for that. Very nice.